This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The bigger picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's our Health and Living segment, and today our show is in line with Autism Awareness Month. For children with autism, inclusive learning starts in the formative years, so they are given equal opportunities to learn, to play, and even to develop their potential. But many children who are on the spectrum or autism spectrum still face challenges when it comes to getting accepted into as well as being embraced in preschool. So we're going to have this discussion as to the importance of preschool for children who have autism spectrum disorder. Joining me, of course, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, our consultant developmental pediatrician. Welcome, Dr. Rajini. It's been ages since I did a show with you.
I know, right, Mira? I've sort of forgotten that we used to do them so regularly before.
We did, yes. And you must have your, you know, time taken up this month. I mean, Autism Awareness Month, there's been so much happening, so much awareness happening as well. Have you had your time taken up doing a lot of this work?
Yes, I have. April is always a busy month. And just so the listeners all know, Mira, I can't remember exactly when it was, whether it was 2012, 2013, Autism Awareness Month was changed and reworded to become Autism Acceptance Month, because I think it was felt that there had been a lot more awareness, but maybe not acceptance. But saying that, yes, April is a very busy month, very special month. And I'm really glad that there's so many more things happening. But I wish we could spread it out so it continues over the year and not just all hones in on April alone. Yeah.
So it is Autism Acceptance Month now?
Yes.
That's fantastic. You know, I always learn something new from you, like typically, children who are typically developing and non-typically developing, you know, all those sort of words that we just don't think about, you know. Okay, Autism Acceptance Month. So we have joining us also two mums, Intan Miranti. She's also a learning and behavioral consultant, mother to Andy, who's 22. Welcome to the show, Intan.
Hi, Mira. How are you?
I'm very well. And you've come on the show as well before, haven't you?
Yes. Okay.
And also joining us, mummy to Timor, who's 12 years old, Nori Abdullah. Welcome to the show, Nori.
Thank you so much, Mira. You're really happy to be here with all of you.
You are most welcome. You know, let's talk about acceptance now that Dr. Rajini has said, you know, it is Autism Awareness Month. What is true acceptance of differently abled children actually look like, Dr. Rajini?
For me, we'll start with parents, and you know, I'm often the bearer of bad news. But saying that, nowadays I find that a lot of parents have already got some awareness that their children have different abilities compared to other children, which is why they bring their kids to see me. But having to accept a child may take time. And you know when parents have accepted their children, for me, is when they stop saying, will he be normal again? So as long as parents keep saying, how do we make him behave normally? Or how do we make sure he doesn't do all this again, all these odd behaviors. For me, when parents start to say to me, so how do we work around some of these difficulties? That's when I know that maybe parents have accepted what their children has. When we talk about society, though, totally different ballgame. I think maybe the mums here and even Intan from a learning perspective can shed more light. What I'm seeing in the families that I work with is a lot more awareness in society, but not acceptance yet. And again, you know, it's when I get little notes from teachers saying, how do we stop him talking to himself? Or how do we stop this behavior? Then I know, okay, maybe acceptance is not that yet, not there yet. Although people are more aware and they want to help and they want to take in some of these children into their schools and preschools. So, yeah.
Okay. So it starts with acceptance from parents first and then society Definitely. After. Intan, how did you deal with the acceptance part of, you know, Andy's, when, you know, you found out that Andy actually was on, had autism spectrum disorder? When did the acceptance come for you, and how did you get to that?
That was 20 years ago. This is really a long journey for me, in terms of the whole autism experience, personal autism experience. But I think I was one of those people who didn't have that much of a problem with denial. I was just ready to hit the ground running and grieve along the way.
Okay. And it's taken, how long did it take you to, is acceptance there? Would you say no?
My personal acceptance of my son?
Yes.
Being autistic? Yes.
Okay. What about you, Nori?
I resonate with what Intan is saying. I think we very much got into action mode. We're very fortunate to have support from the family. In fact, Dr. Regini was with us at the very beginning of that journey. And I think it took a while for the full acceptance. I think I was okay with the diagnosis, and I felt, you know, and then discussing with Kari, and then as a family, we were like, okay, let's see what we can do. How can we help him? How can we support him? We really got into that action mode. And maybe about a year later, after we've been doing so much, it finally sank in one day when I realized that this was, this was for life, right? So it was sort of different levels of acceptance. If I may, Mira, can I speak a little bit to this point about going beyond awareness?
Sure.
Yeah, so, you know, it's sort of like a good start, but it's not an end goal or something to be satisfied with, right? So when you're aware, you're learning, and it might imply, but it doesn't actually mean taking action. And I think that for the acceptance part of it, it stems from understanding, and otherwise it would just be tolerating something or putting up with it. You know, you want to be able to say and do things, right? And that acceptance means being able to say to someone, I see you, I get you as who you are. Right? Acknowledging, recognition, and accepting is a conscious effort to overcome preconceived notions, sometimes even prejudice. And acceptance, you know, I heard this quote once from through an autistic self-advocacy network, actually, that acceptance looks at the commonalities that we share, and there's a strength inherent in diversity, you know. So I'm very hopeful, like for a country like Malaysia, I always say that diversity is part of our DNA. It's something that's allowed us to punch above our weight as a relatively small country. And I just want that step, that extra step towards the acceptance of neurodiversity, right? People mm-hmm. whose brains and minds operate differently. And, you know, ultimately we want to go towards inclusion. And that really, really is the goal, right? For there's a place for someone anywhere really in our communities, in society. And that's my hope.
Sure. Intan, as a learning and behavioral consultant, what do you think is stopping or hindering acceptance in our society?
Well, I work with young children, and occasionally I go into preschools for observations and other reasons. And in the context of preschools to schools, the acceptance, okay, let's put it this way. The schools that are doing inclusive education best are the ones where the principal or head teacher has truly embraced not awareness, not acceptance, but appreciation. Now, appreciation not just for the child with autism or the child with autism having strengths, because there are many children with autism who may not at the preschool level be showing these strengths. But they're also appreciating that other children benefit from exposure, daily exposure, not Autism Awareness Month. But daily exposure and developing relationships with children with autism and are so changed and grow up to become compassionate adults. So if you're a teacher or a preschool principal trying to instill character and values, This is such a wonderful opportunity, the child. So this is what I spoke with some principals of inclusive schools yesterday. in anticipation of today. And I see that, I can hear that, that from their voice, that they have embodied already the idea that these children are so wonderful because they make us better people. So if you start from that, when you start from that, everything else falls into place. Oh, I don't have the skills. Well, I'll go learn it because it's worth it to me, because my typical children also benefit from this inclusive education.
And Dr. Rajini, your experience?
Yeah, you know, I met a clinical psychologist at a international autism meeting, Peter Vermeulen, and when I stayed back to just ask him some questions, and we were talking about, you know, trying to persuade schools to accept children, and he said something to me which made me change sometimes how I conclude my reports. And instead of saying it would benefit this child if you included him in your school, I now end my reports with, it would definitely benefit the other children if this child is included in your school, because it teaches other children empathy, cooperation, etc. So it was something he said to me on the in the lines of what Intan said. And sometimes, you know, some parents, for a lot of children nowadays that I see, of course, I'm seeing a certain population who can avoid intervention. It's almost as if they go out, they search for intervention for their children early. The children improve a lot. But when it comes to being honest with schools and saying, my child is on the autism spectrum, they almost have to justify why the schools should allow their children to enter school. And, you know, alongside that come along the reports that we as doctors give or therapists give. And, you know, it's almost as though they have to beg for their children to be placed in schools. And one parent said to me one day, she said, I'm actually very tired. I'm very tired of going to schools, getting my child to sit through entrance exams and, you know, observation periods, only to be told that we're rejected. You know, so I think for me, that sort of, now when I speak to parents and families, I try and prepare them for this. I try and be very honest with them and say, I don't think your child is ready to go into a school like that, but maybe you need to see, you know, a behavioral consultant or an educational psychologist or a clinical psychologist who may want to also give you their opinion. But it would be more damaging to expose your children to the rejections sometimes. So it may be better sometimes to upskill your kids before you try. Be absolutely sure before you try. And be absolutely sure you're prepared for rejection so you can prepare your children for rejection. And I think that's how it's changed my practice in a way.
You know, Nori, did you face similar experiences? I mean, I'm sure you put Timur into preschool as well. Did you have those challenges at all?
A little bit. I would say that maybe some of what I'm going to share is going to be with our experience with Timur, but also with, you know, some other parents. And we've built a network of wonderful friendship and support over the years, which, by the way, is critical, I think, if you have a child with special needs. So with Timur, I think he was diagnosed relatively early. He just turned 3. And we went with looking for an early intervention program, and also kicked off with occupational and speech therapy. I mean, I recognize how very, very fortunate we are, and Timur is to be able to do that. So he sort of started with more of a special center, and then we transitioned into a more regular typical preschool. And I would have to say that at least on a relative scale in Malaysia, preschools are probably more inclusive. I think children not too different when they are younger, and because there is a popularity to Montessori-like sort of, you know, approaches to education, that belief in child's pace also opens up room for children who learn differently, right? All sorts of kids who learn differently. So we were quite fortunate, you know, wonderful sort of, you know, neighborhood kindergarten in TTDI. And I kind of, you know, want to speak to what Intan said about, you know, finally it's that sort of mindset, really. You know, it all begins from there. When they already believe that, you know, every child, every person has value and has a place, that starts with everything, right? You don't even necessarily have to have somebody with all the exact credentials and perfect training and everything. I mean, for example, we've been very fortunate, like Timo has a music teacher right now, wonderful music teacher, doesn't come from special ed experience in any way, but she was willing to give it a try, and she made her own effort to figure out, you know, how do we make him a little bit more comfortable, what accommodations can we make for him in this space, and it's worked out really great. And really it's these individuals also that have made a big difference. So I do know that there have been other people, and Dr. Regina is absolutely right, where they have to find this fine balance between being able to give schools enough information so that their child can be best supported, but not to the point where they're rejected, right? So it's super difficult, because you want people to actually, you know enough about your child, and that would be best, you know. So I think that's why over the years, like for our family, me and Kari decided that, you know, we have to speak about this much more so that we normalize all these things, you know, that we get away from the taboos, we get away from, you know, cultural misconceptions about, you know, things that are not so good, or children, you know, should be separated or streamed and things like that. And finally, it's going to be through, you know, society's own belief in you know, the value of accommodating and taking into consideration, you know, these different needs and being compassionate. All these things are good for everybody. So our own experience was very, very positive, but I do know that things can be super difficult. And if it's already difficult at a preschool, I tell you, it gets harder for primary and secondary. I mean, our public education system at the moment is only inclusive to some degree for disabilities which are physical in nature, so physical conditions. Definitely not anything neurological, developmental, intellectual. We don't have that. We only have integrated schools. And even then, those are, you know, special schools. It's not that you have an integration program for all schools. So thankfully, we have like a zero reject policy, because that at least entitles a child to education. But the problem is then we don't equip our teachers in schools enough. And I think sometimes that's the problem, because you have a desire sometimes, but you know, but people are also a little afraid, right? They're very apprehensive. They don't know whether it's best. And Dr. Reggie's absolutely right. Sometimes it's not the right time for your kids to be in that kind of situation. They have to be ready. They have to be prepared. And also for those who can afford to or have the privilege, you might actually want to consider, and a fellow mom was sharing this with me, is mainstream really the goal? Do you really want that, you know, at all stages? I mean, at some point in time, certainly inclusion, certainly exposure, because, you know, they have to be prepared for life. They have to be prepared for more typical, regular situations where things are not adjusted for them and made great. But, you know, to start off with, to be ready, I mean, for any child, really, to be ready, you want to have a think about what your options are and what type of school might be best for your own kid. You know, every kid is different. We all learn differently.
Yeah, we'll come back and find out from Dr. Rajani why early childhood years are critical when it comes to recognizing children with autism spectrum disorder. That's coming up next. If you have a question for either Dr. Rajani, Intan Miranti, or Nori Abdullah, give us a call. It's 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. It's Autism Acceptance Month, the month of April, and we're discussing preschools and, you know, children who are who do have autism spectrum disorder. Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, a consultant developmental pediatrician on the show with us, together with Intan Miranti, who's a learning and behavioral consultant, also parent to Andy, who's 22. I can't believe it. Andy's 22. I've got one of his paintings with me at home on a bag. I think it was printed as gifts from the Malaysian Healthcare Tourism Council. And Nuri Abdullah, a parent, Timur, who's 12 years old now, sharing their experience having, you know, children on the spectrum and when it comes to education. Dr. Rajini, why is it so critical for children on the spectrum to actually have this preschool or early, you know, education before they actually enter into mainstream schools?
Well, you know, assuming children are ready, and you know, when we talk about preschool education and inclusion, I think what we want to be clear is for some children, going into a full-time mainstream preschool can be very stressful. So, you know, then we need to take heed of that and maybe just do it a couple of times a week or, you know, an hour a day or something like that. Why is it important? If you take it from the perspective of the child who has the different ability, it adds an extra intervention into their whole early intervention program, yeah? Because children learn from children. Children are the best teachers for each other. And we're not, we must take, move away from learning as being a sitting down activity where we learn concrete things like colors, numbers, shapes, writing, reading. But learning in terms of learning it in a context, a social context, yeah? It's about queuing up, waiting for your turn in the playground. It's about, you know, watching what someone else is doing and trying to emulate what they do. It's about having fun together. It's about noticing how the other person is feeling and maybe trying to respond to it. So if you even flip it in the other way, and you look at the typically developing children in the mainstream schools, it's the same thing. They are learning from their friend who is differently able, and they are learning to adapt their behavior so that they are able to communicate with their friend, makes them more flexible, makes them more empathetic, you know? And so we're developing skills on both sides, if you want to look at it that way. And, you know, children in the preschool years are blinded to color differences, yeah? I still recall my own child when she was in preschool and there was a child in her school who had hearing aids and he looked different, yeah? Because of a genetic disorder, he looked very different. He had some what we call craniofacial abnormalities. But the kids in the class didn't see that. And what my daughter used to tell me when, you know, I used to take her up to her classroom once a week when I could. And she would say to me, "Mummy, when you see so-and-so, when you say hi to him, you need to stand in front of him and wave your hand." And I said, "Oh, really?" She goes, "Yeah, you know, he wears something. He doesn't have ears," and he didn't have real ears. "He wears something because he cannot hear. So if you call him from behind, he won't hear you, and it's rude." And you know, she was telling me this as we were walking up the stairs. And I just thought, wow, the power of an adult who is talking to this child in school. So it was the teachers. It was the teachers who told the kids, "When you speak to this child, you must stand in front of him. You must use your hands and your mouth." And the message got across. And, you know, he was included in everything. And the kids used to fight to see who would help him. Mm. And, you know, roll on into primary school. And my daughter went to a Sekolah Kebangsaan. And what I noticed was, so there was a boy who was on the spectrum in her class. In year one, very supportive teacher, no issue. You know, year two, some teachers were a little bit critical, and she would come back and say things like, teacher so-and-so keeps calling to this child rude, or he gets upset in this teacher's class. And then come to standard three, and again, a fantastic teacher who actually rewarded the kids for kindness. So not who passes up their work first or who got 100. And it's that sort of thing that children respond to. And even for the child who is differently abled, seeing other people being kind to him, giving them praises, they're just like any other child. So there's this misconception that if you're on the autism spectrum, you have no feelings, or you have difficulty understanding other people's emotions. But I can tell you, for a lot of these children, they know when people are being kind to them. And you can see this even in the children who are labeled severely autistic or on the severe end of the spectrum, that their reactions are different with how people respond to them. So what I'm saying is inclusion has benefits for both sides, the typically developing child and also the child who's differently able. And those preschool years is when we, and if you look at brain development, when we talk about, everybody knows about motor skills, speech, etc. People forget about emotional regulation, behavioral responses. The important period for developing that is actually in the preschool years, right up to 7 or 8 years old. If you get it right then, when they're teenagers, you find that they're different as well. So if you look at kids who have lots of tantrums and all that, you can expect that your teenage years are going to be a challenge too. So, you know, I think, I've been rambling on. I hope I've got that message across.
You have, certainly, for sure, Dr. Rajini. Inclusive, but, you know, we always have these people coming back and saying, we're not ready, our teachers are not trained, you know, the environment is not, you know, is not conducive, you know, all that sort of thing. But Intan, do you think we should just take the plunge and do it? And are we overthinking this whole thing about inclusion? Can we just, as Nori said, I mean, music teacher has no experience teaching special children, but, you know, she or he threw himself in the deep end and just went along with it, right? Based on sort of a Timor's abilities and all of that. But do you think then we're overthinking? We should just do it then?
Well, definitely, I think that it's time to just start. And if you start with the heart, everything will fall into place. And I'm not just saying that. It's because there are models for successful inclusive settings. There are models for successful inclusion in PE settings or music settings. So we don't have to really reinvent the wheel in Malaysia. So it starts with just wanting to do it. And then next is finding, you know, where to get the training and the resources. I think a lot of times I work with teachers in school, preschool teachers, and you can see the ones who really, really want to learn are the ones who won't leave me alone. You know, I'll say, okay, I'll give you my number and you can ask me later, but I do have to do some observation of this child for a while. But you can really see the keen teachers, the ones that say, okay, well, next time if he does this, what do I do? Or next time, should I do this with the other children? You can just see the person who really wants to get going.
And for parents who tend to want to just keep their children at home because they are afraid, right? I can imagine they are afraid. I mean, people, there are some very unkind people out there. Nori, did you go through that at all, that you felt that, you know, maybe I should just keep my child at home and I can, you know, look after him and shelter him from the world?
I think for us it was, I think I want him to be better prepared. So I want him to be in a fully supportive environment and hence the special school to begin with. But I think we've always felt that, you know, well, if you break it down, for all parents, they probably in essence want their child to have an independent, purposeful, happy life, right? What form that takes and all that, you know, that all depends. But really, you ultimately want that. And I think when we have the special needs children, those things come to the fore even more, especially the question of independence and things like that. So for us, we're like, we have to be able to support him being able to get there as best he can. and the importance of going to school and some form of school was there. And as he got older, I think we firmly believed that an inclusion setting, which would be sort of a more typical, regular or mainstream school, that would also be a good place for children of all different learning styles and abilities and things like that would be the way. And so that's, they would be like a step-by-step, right? To prepare for real life, because you're going to get to a point where, your child is going to grow up and has to be able to cope with an environment or a setting that's not really going to have adjustments and support and things like that. Right. So I think for us, we feel it's really important to work really hard on how we can support Timo be able to do that. But at the same time, I'm grateful for opportunities like this because we get to talk about it. And, you know, maybe somebody who's listening who would normally not be aware or have an understanding of this topic would suddenly go, oh, wait, OK, maybe there's something I can kind of do to support that. And it would be so great if more people could take that plunge, as Intan was saying, because there are options of learning and training. I mean, even informally, right? There are certain even YouTube channels and sites that support how to create a more inclusive setting in your classroom. You know, what are tips and strategies for accommodating that child who is different? It can kind of start from there and then move on. Obviously, in situations where you require more formal training, but all that makes a big difference. I think that's there about wanting to protect your child, but we also know that resilience is going to be one of those things that he does need to have. And that's the thing with special kids. They actually end up being kids with grit. And if you do any kind of reading in this in areas of bringing up children and stuff like that, more and more it's skills like that that are going to get them by in life, right? Having a big empathy bones or muscles, being able to get along with other people, being able to get up every time you fall. You know, these are the kind of things. This is now what you need to survive, right?
Yeah. Intan?
Yeah, just about a question on sheltering the children at home. From my journey with Andy, being from when he was 2 until 22, and then with some of my students who are older now, and so I've traveled the path for more than 10 years with them, what I think is that if there's a short-term necessity for sheltering the child for a while, let's say they've been bullied in school and it hasn't worked out and the child's traumatized, don't keep fighting that battle. Sometimes it's okay to retreat for a while, lick the wounds, find the help, okay, reset. We have seen from the end of the pandemic that children do, they have suffered from it, but also there have been some positives that come out of staying home. So I think life is like that. There might be years or months when the child isn't in school for a reason or the other. And it's life. And it's just, it's readying for the next step of social educational setting. That's what I think. So I also don't want the parents to worry too much if, my child hasn't got a school right now or something. I just wanted to throw that out.
Dr. Rajani?
Yeah, listening to Intan, one story comes to mind. And this is a boy, mother's a single mother. She works in a boutique in a mall, so it's a 10-to-10 job. And I saw him when he was 2.5. And, she couldn't really afford private services, but she found NGO services, and she really worked in the sense that she looked for these services and tried to give her son the best. And so when it came to schooling, she initially was very keen that he must go to a mainstream Chinese school. She wanted him to learn the language, etc. But after a month, she pulled him out because he got bullied. Bullied not by the students, bullied by the teachers. I won't use the term abuse, but if you ask me, it's sort of almost
borders
like
on child that.
Abuse. Yes. Mm-hmm. So she put him into a pendidikan khas, a special class, integrated class in a Sekolah Kebangsaan. And she continued to, do activities with him when she could at weekends. Grandma was spoiling him, but she took on board that she needed to involve him in household chores, cooking, etc. And he had a wonderful granddad who would take him out, taught him cycling, etc. And granddad had a stroke. A stroke following a road traffic accident, and was bedbound. And this happened when he was about 10 years old. So for a while, mom had to stop him from going to school because there was no one to take him to school and bring him back, because granddad was the one who did that. And grandma needed help. Grandma needed help at home in terms of caring for granddad. And in the 2 years that he rarely went to school, so whenever they could, they tried to send him. A good Samaritan would help out. School was understanding, didn't report him to the Ministry of Education or anything like that. I didn't have to write letters to say, please excuse him for school, etc. But this boy continued to thrive despite that, because, and actually he developed a lot of other skills, you know. Being independent, being able to make himself simple food. Mum would try her best at weekends to take him, or even in the mornings if she went to the market to buy stuff for grandma to cook, she would take him to the market. So he picked up skills like that, like using money, looking at the time, because there was a set time for grandma to give tube feeds, and he would go and nudge her. I mean, he was what they would term minimally verbal. But this was a kid who, despite not going to school, could. And when it came back to, you know, mom felt guilty. She found a transporter. She was a little bit better. Before the pandemic, she got him back into school 3 days a week. Teachers did not find that he had trouble to adapt again. So there's always things you can do, as Intan says, if you have to leave school, as long as you decide what your goals and aims were. So for mum, she felt guilty, but she knew that he would pick up other skills, and where she could, she got this boy involved, you know. And it was, for all the times that therapists were trying to get him to learn time and money, he finally did it when there was a context in which he had to learn it, you know. And I think this is important as well.
Yep. How do you manage expectations, though, when it comes to parents? As you said, you know, mummy wanted him to go to a Chinese school. I mean, we all have our own set ideas of, you know, our children and the education that they should get, and, you know, that kind of thing. How do you manage expectations?
You know, when I'm teaching the trainees or younger pediatricians in clinics, what I say to them is, when I was young and just come out doing this work, I had very set ideals and set rules. Oh, you can't do this. You can't go to schools, you know. And then I came back to Malaysia, and there were people telling me, oh, you need to put your child in this school. This is the best preschool, or this is the best school. And I still remember we came back, put my daughter in a private school, and then we took her out and put her in a Sekolah Kebangsaan. And everybody told me I was making the biggest mistake ever. And, you know, she's 23 now. I think she was so happy when she went to her Sekolah Kebangsaan. And she said, please don't take me out of this school. I can play here, you know. And she learned so much more. And I said to, that actually taught me a lesson, because we all have expectations of our own for our children. My husband reset my expectations. He said, look, come on, we're on a government servant salary. We can't afford private school long term. We've got to save. And she's not learning to talk Bahasa. We've got to get her out and get her into a Sekolah Kebangsaan. So you need people to always tell you and reset your expectations. And I always say that's where I am here. But if parents say to me, I want my child to try that school, I always say, okay, I'm not going to stop you because you are the parent. But here's where I'm worried about, and I want you to be aware. And the minute you start to see anything negative showing up in his behavior, that may indicate to you that he's not happy. So when you see that, you got to step in. So I try and equip parents with that. Or you have to step in and support him,
push through or take him out of that setting before you do any more harm. If you have a good relationship with families, it's easier to do it. And I always find it difficult when families come to see me a couple months before they start school and I have to set expectations. But if I've grown with families, that relationship helps them understand what I'm trying to get across to them. So, yeah.
Okay, we'll come back and find out about moving into mainstream schools because sometimes that can be possible, may not be possible for children who have autism spectrum disorder. That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. If you have just joined us, we're discussing, children in preschools, children who are on the autism spectrum. It is Autism Acceptance Month, and Dr. Rajini Saranandan, a consultant developmental pediatrician, on the line with me. Intan Miranti, a learning and behavioral consultant, also parent to Andy, who's 22, and Nuri Abdullah, a mummy sharing her experience. Timur is her son at the age of 12. You know, Intan, I just want to ask you, Andy's 22, my goodness. What's Andy up to today?
Well, right now he just went through an interview because he's trying to get into a course to do an e-commerce course. And he's waiting to hear back from it. And if he gets in, he'll learn how to market his... he has a line of books that he authors. He wants to learn how to do it online, have an online business. So that's what he's excited about right now.
Wonderful. Is he still painting and drawing and stuff?
Oh, he doesn't paint as much as he draws and writes. So he's got his next books in his head. He wants to do a board game to accompany his books, or maybe a card game. He's not sure yet.
Wow. Okay. Can you just describe Andy a little to us? Is Andy verbal, nonverbal, in terms of cognitive abilities and all of that? Just describe Andy a little to us.
Well, I like to describe him as young at heart. Because cognitively, he is very much more innocent than your average 22-year-old. And he will admit that he has to work on certain things to be able to understand how other people think. He is able to speak. He occasionally does have on some days, he has a stutter. He types very fast and he writes all right. He writes all right now. So his best form of communication is through his typing and his writing, and then which he shares with the world with his books, which is mostly fiction, although I do see myself show up in a bunch of unsavory characters sometimes and that as well, but he insists fiction, so it saves the family. He's found a great group of young adults also with similar issues, and some of them don't have similar issues, but they're a very complementary group. And they've got each other through the pandemic, I think, via Zoom. And they had a relationship before that as a group. And they went to karaoke for his 21st birthday last year, which is
fantastic. You know, I would love it if I appeared in one of the books that my children wrote. At least
I don't know what you're wishing for.
That's okay. You made some impact, you know, whatever the impact is. Nori, what about Timur? You want to just describe, he's 12 now, you were saying. You ready for the teenage years?
Oh my gosh. We are going through that right now.
Oh, okay.
Literally leaning on Intan a little bit because it's puberty. Puberty is a challenging phase of a human being's life, and puberty in a pandemic is difficult, and then it's amplified by having, you know, developmental conditions. So we are on a bit of a roller coaster right now, but it's good because it's also a time when Timur is learning a lot more independence. And also we're actively working on him, on supporting him being able to regulate himself. You know, so I think when you have a child who's got sensory integration issues that make it difficult to sort of process or make sense of the world in a lot of different ways, you need to start off by helping them, regulate, to calm down, to be at ease. And then that is what sets the tone for being able to to do other things, right? To being able to focus or to learn or just to be more calm and happy. So it's, you know, we do, and we still do have this co-regulation thing. So where you kind of, you know, supporting him through it. Or if, let's say, we're trying to remind him to take deep breaths, then we would be taking the deep breaths with him. We would be reminding or prompting him like, hey, look, you have your putty here, or you can squeeze a tennis ball and, you know, things like that. So it's been really great to see when he's sort of remembering, you know, he says, you want ice? You know, so he's asking for a drink of water and he's like, I need a big, or he'll, you can hear him say like, relax. Relax. those things are all really, you know, really encouraging. But yeah, growing like a beanpole. I mean, I have three boys. He's the middle one. They're all growing like beanpoles. But I love that I have these other two because they're really great reference points for me. So I have a six-year-old, and the six-year-old, sometimes he's at the, you know, he's super expressive, right? He's six, so he will say all sorts of things, or when he's frustrated, it will all come out. And it's such a good reminder sometimes that, wait a second, you know, probably Timo is feeling just the same way, you know, bigger brother is feeling the same way, and our friend is, you know, probably a little bit more articulate. Or I'm telling myself, wait a second, I'm feeling that way. It's just that because I'm a grown up, I'm not, you know, going to be able to have a meltdown or scream and shout. But, you know, of course, living in a pandemic, there have been days when you want to do that. And then I have, you know, the older one who's 13. So also the same. So my one, number one and two are close in age, and the puberty piece, I have Abang to reference for that, and it's good. It's good that we have that. But yes, it is a roller coaster at the moment. At home, life is not boring, but yeah, I am grateful.
Intan, you have any advice for Nori?
Sorry, are you talking to me?
Yeah, Intan, do you have any advice for Nori?
Oh,
I mean, you've been through that, the puberty and all of that. I mean, he's 22 now.
All right, I don't know about advice, but I'll tell you that the most significant thing I think that my Andy's dad and I did to support him through those years was actually getting parenting coaching. And here's the clincher. It was the recommendations for the books and other resources. So parenting wasn't parenting special needs. It was just your regular how to parent teenagers self-help books, because there's so much similarity. There's not that much difference in how you parent a child, a teenager on the spectrum. and most of it is not about teaching them. It's about teaching ourselves how to parent in a very, very different way than parenting the pre-teen years. I think that helped tremendously, is changing myself. But you can do it yourself. We really needed help.
Okay. Dr. Redney, you have advice?
I've got a teenager at home and a teenager in the pandemic. It's crazy. And I have to remind myself when I have my meltdowns, and it mirrors on her meltdowns, and or maybe it's my meltdowns that causes her meltdowns, that, you know, when her sisters were going through the teenage years, they had so many more outlets. And I think this pandemic has been particularly challenging for the teens and the toddlers. You know, in my line of work, I'm seeing that with the toddlers, but also with the teens. And so I'm having to, I am very lucky that my husband's cool, calm and collected. And I'm totally the opposite, highly strung, I react totally different, like from what I am at work. So I sometimes have to maybe heed some of the advice I take. So what I say to parents is get them out as much as you can. They need that exercise. They need to de-stress, expose them, and walk away. Let them have their meltdowns sometimes, walk away. They need to express themselves. And if they can't do it in the confines of the home, they're going to do it in other places. So home needs to be a safe haven where they can express themselves the way they want to.
Intan?
I just want to say that, tacking on to what Dr. Rajini said, Andy, the other day when I was having a little fit of my own, he said, he just stared at me for a long time and said, Mom, you have to learn how to control yourself. Take a nap. He said, maybe you should take a nap. And that resonated big time because you know what? It's a lot of time. It's mirroring.
Yeah.
And I need to take a nap.
We're running out of time. Nori, would you have a message this World Autism Acceptance Month?
My ask for this month is, you know, just for everybody out there to maybe consider a little something that you could perhaps do to sort of help the community. And it could be from, you know, it's from your own life, from your own context, it's wherever you're coming from. And it doesn't have to be big at all. If it's, you know, if you happen to already know a family or someone, then take that mom or dad out for a coffee yang tak puasa or after Ramadan, you know, just because sometimes it can be a little bit lonely. If you're not, you know, necessarily part of this community, you could maybe strike a conversation with somebody. You know, let's say you happen to hear this show, and then being able to talk about it is building a sense of awareness. But anything really, and it should be, you know, something that you're comfortable with. But yeah, I've been able to sort of put that out there for this month, and it's been amazing, and the responses that have come back. I'm very encouraged. It's been really great to hear people respond and wanting to do something in their own way. So I would say, yeah, please come and celebrate Autism Month along with us. And if there's anything that you think you can do and it helps the community, you'll find that it's going to help you too. I mean, I tell a lot of people that I think finally, you know, Timur will probably bring to me so much more than I can bring to him. That was a very clear reason and purpose why he showed up, and you know, I have him, and whatever the day is, I'm very, very grateful to be, you know, mama of my three boys and all Timur and all with all that he is.
Ladies, thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, a consultant developmental pediatrician, Intan Miranti, a learning and behavioral consultant, also mum to Andy, who's 22, and Nori Abdullah, mum to Timur, who's 12 years old, in our show for Autism Acceptance Month on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.